This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight:
the migrants were rescued off the southern coast of Calabria near the southern city of Crotone after the vessel was spotted by a plane that belongs to the European Union border agency Frontex.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna. Full details coming up.
Also, President Trump stunned lawmakers at a White House meeting on immigration yesterday when he reportedly referred to Haitian and African nations in offensive terms. And the first batch of 1,000 soldiers from the AU peacekeeping mission in Somalia has left the country.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story: the Italian Coast Guard Service says 264 migrants were rescued from a boat off the coast of Calabria yesterday, where traffickers have increasingly been using smaller boats recently. The vessel was sighted by a plane belonging to the EU border agency Frontex, and the migrants were rescued off the southern city of Crotone, a spokesman said. The spokesman said the boat probably came from Turkey. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about the rescue operation, as well as other rescue operations that took place this week.
The migrants were rescued off the southern coast of Calabria near the southern city of Crotone after the vessel was spotted by a plane that belongs to the European Union border agency Frontex. Now, the boat is believed to have come from Turkey, which is interesting to see that this route is being activated once again. Several Coast Guard boats and a British ship working for Frontex took part in the rescue. Whether or not this is going to become a more popular route, we'll just have to wait and see. But it's interesting to see that this is once again activated, because you might remember back in December 2014, January 2015, traffickers were moving migrants on very large vessels, hundreds of migrants, and there were some tragedies there at that time after the migrants were left on the vessels on autopilot. More recently, we've seen far more migrants taking that route from Libya and North Africa to the Mediterranean. So it'll be interesting to see if this is activating a new trend from Turkey, moving migrants from Turkey to Europe.
Also, there have been a number of other incidents that occurred during the week regarding migrants. What are some of those?
Well, 160 migrants have been reported dead or missing in three separate incidents in the Mediterranean this week. And the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, is calling for more action to save lives and help the resettlement of refugees. They feel that these people are facing extreme risks. In order to save human lives, there needs to be greater intervention and to really stop people putting their lives at risk making these journeys. On Monday, around 60 people died after a rubber dinghy launched from Libya sank in the Mediterranean. We had another incident on the same day, a separate incident, a dinghy carrying around 54 people capsized off the coast of Morocco, and around two men died there. And on Tuesday, there was another incident where between 60 and 100 people were reported missing when another boat found itself in difficulties. It's really quite a lot of activity there, particularly for January, which is usually a very quiet time in the winter months. But that gives you some indication of just how desperate people are at the moment to continue making these crossings.
And most of these migrants are from sub-Saharan Africa, including those that left from Turkey.
That's right. They're believed to be mostly from sub-Saharan Africa. I haven't seen the details on which countries. There was some very shocking vision released just a few days ago by the Italian Coast Guard as people were trying to rescue migrants as their dinghy was sinking. And I think that just underscores the great tragedies that are going on in the Mediterranean and the desperation of these people to try and leave their poverty, famine, or difficult situations in Africa to reach Europe in search of a better life.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
Hundreds of Nigerian refugees have returned from Libya over the past 2 months. They're part of an evacuation of undocumented migrants stranded in a North African country while trying to reach the European Union. The International Organization for Migration says up to 5,000 Nigerians may be in Libya. They and many others not only fail to make it to Europe, but become prey to traffickers who have sold them into slavery. Officials say a large percentage of the returnees are from Edo State in southern Nigeria and are not being resettled there. Reporter Isaac Linus was recently in the capital, Benin City, where he met with the returnees. VOA's William Eagle asked him about some of their stories.
A trafficker will come to Benin, and he's from Benin. He will take some of them, like people that I met, they told me. They will pay him money to take them to Libya, and from Libya, he will introduce them to another trafficker who is going to take them across the sea. But at the end of the day, this trafficker will go and sell them off to other Libyans, Libyan rebels. And these rebels, according to what these returnees told us, they control the community. They are like the government of the communities. They stay in Libya. What the picture that these people gave us was that Libya has no government. So every rebel group that has ammunition can just take any part of the country and control it. So these traffickers sell these people intending going to Europe to these people. And at the time that they are being sold, they are not even aware that they are being sold. I met a boy whom was sold for $400. They sell you to a certain Libyan, and this Libyan wants to make money off you. So they will keep on beating you. They beat them 3 times a day. So when they are beating you, they put you on phone with your mother or your father or your relations back here in Benin. And you would be telling your parents that, please, I have been sold to this man, and this man says he needs 1 million naira. 1 million naira is about $2,500.
How are these people able to break free and to be taken by the IOM or the Nigerian government back to Edo State?
The story by CNN, you know, when CNN broke the story about the slavery, the slave market in Libya, and also the Nigerian government, the state, like the Edo State government, they said they've been aware about these stories. And they've been making efforts on how, since August, I spoke to the chairman of Edo State, who is in charge of these people returning back. And she told us that they've started since August. It's just that they've not been able to reach them over there. So IOM now started moving from camp. They now collaborated with the Libyan government, and they started moving from camp to camp. And in every camp that they meet these Nigerian immigrants, they would tell them that, okay, yes, some of our brothers that we came with, some of our sisters that we came with, they are stuck in Soso City, they are stuck in Soso Village, they are stuck in that community. So that was how the IOM began to understand, okay, this is where these people are located, and they started picking them out.
Now that they've been taken back to Edo State, what is Edo State government doing to help rehabilitate these people?
Immediately, they picked them up from the airport in Lagos. They transport them down to Edo State. They profile them. They kind of take their data, their names, where they're from, who are their relations, and all of that. Then they keep them in a camp, in hotel. So those who are sick have been taken to hospital. Then afterwards, they get them reunited with their relations. Then from there, there's a government camp where they come for training. They train them. They give them vocational training on trades like farming, fishery, poultry farming, and fashion design, like tailoring. Then after they train them, the government have NGOs whom they are working with, and these NGOs are the ones that train them, particularly this NGO called Initiative for Youth Awareness on Immigration and Development, one of the main NGOs that is training these people. So after a while, they give them certificates. And before then, the government is giving them a token of money of about, I think it's 30,000 naira each month, which it gives them just a token of money to help them while they're around. That goes on for 3 months. Then after 3 months, they must have graduated from that training. They give them some kind of capital to start off their trade.
That was Isaac Linus in Benin City. He's been meeting with hundreds of refugees returning from Libya. He was speaking with VOA's William Eagle.
Well, reactions are continuing to come into U.S. President Donald Trump's apparent crude reference to Haiti and African countries. Trump stunned lawmakers in a White House meeting on immigration yesterday when he reportedly referred to Haiti and African nations in offensive terms. His comment was first reported by media including The Washington Post, The New York Times, and CNN. Trump said the United States should let in more people from places such as Norway, whose prime minister met with him in the White House on Wednesday. The White House has yet to deny reports that the president used vulgar language when talking about Haiti and Africa. Trump reportedly made the remark as Senator Dick Durbin, a Democrat from Illinois, was explaining the outlines of an agreement reached by six bipartisan senators. The agreement would protect nearly 800,000 young immigrants from deportation, as well as bolster border security. So far, the White House has not responded to international fallout over Trump's reported comment.
Kenya is embarking on a pilot program this month to overhaul its education system. The aim is to emphasize skills over knowledge to better prepare youth for the evolving job market. Notably, the new curriculum would include more STEM courses and more vocational training. Rael Ombor has the story from Nairobi.
If implemented, this would be only the second major reform to Kenya's national school curriculum since independence. The last such change in 1985 moved the country to the so-called 8-4-4 system, 8 years of primary school, 4 years of secondary school, and 4 years of university. Now, Kenya's education ministry is rolling out a new model dubbed 2663. The goal is to get students ready for existing and emerging jobs. Kenya has one of the highest rates of unemployment in East Africa, according to the 2016 UN Human Development Index. Sarah Ruto is the chairperson of the Kenya Institute of Curriculum Development, a government agency.
The 844 system has needed to be changed because it was no longer addressing the needs today. If you look at employers, they always say that the graduates they're getting do not have the skills and competencies to fit in the job market. And this might then bring us back to the education system. How are we teaching?
Officials say the new system supports the government development plan called Vision 2030 to transform Kenya into an industrialized middle-income economy by the end of the next decade. The 2663 system reshuffles the number of years students spend at the primary, secondary, and university levels. Children will enter preschool at age 4 and stay 2 years. The student will then move to 6 years of primary school, where the focus will be on logical thinking, social skills, and digital literacy. Next would be 6 years of secondary school to include rigorous career guidance. The last 3 years would be centered around arts, sports, financial literacy, entrepreneurship, and STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Students would focus on a specific area based on their abilities. Digital literacy would be a main facet throughout, and schools would shift away from exam-based evaluation. Secondary school students would sit for a final exam to determine whether they will move to an additional 3 years of either university or additional vocational training. Ruto says Kenya is following the global trend.
There are so many changes happening, and one of the biggest changes is technology and how technology is shaping and impacting. If you do not sit back and start for reforming, then you will find that what you're doing in the school is very different from what is happening. And this will mean that when your children start graduating from the school system, they're being trained for something that is not in society.
However, experts warn that a new curriculum is not a magic bullet. They say Kenya must also address other issues, for example, frequent teacher strikes and lack of basic necessities in schools like desks. The new model is being tested in schools selected by the government. If all goes well, educators will submit a formal plan for a nationwide overhaul to Parliament for debate and approval. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
The first batch of 1,000 soldiers from the African Union peacekeeping mission in Somalia, AMISOM, has left the country. The move comes as part of a long-term plan to pull out of the country and hand over security to the Somali army. Ambassador Francisco Madeira is the special representative of the chairperson of the African Union Commission. He told reporters in Nairobi recently more troops from the peacekeeping force would end their mission later this month. VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
At a recent news conference in Nairobi, the AU envoy explained the plan for withdrawing troops from Somalia. It follows a review by the African Union, which recommended a gradual pullout.
We have already taken out of Somalia 1,000. They are already gone. So the obligation of the resolution was that by December, 1,000 should leave. They've already left. 1,000 are gone. And according to the UN Security Council Resolution 2372, another 1,000 here must go. We're ready. And we still continue to insist. Let's put our act together and let's continue to fight Al-Shabaab with or without, with less numbers or bigger numbers. Let's fight and let's win, and we will win over Al-Shabaab. It will be defeated.
Members of the AU mission, known as HAMISOM, have been helping the Somali government battle militant group Al-Shabaab since 2007. At the height of the war, the force was comprised of 22,000 strong army from five African nations: Uganda, Burundi, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Djibouti. Now, the numbers have gone down to around 21,000 soldiers. The AU envoy says one issue under debate today is the call by some for the international community to lift the arms embargo on the country.
The Somalis are lacking in weapons. If we have a better option to provide them with these weapons, I'm prepared to consider it, because I know that the issue of lifting arms embargo is still a very controversial issue in many areas. So I don't want to take sides.
In 1992, the AU Security Council imposed an open-ended arms embargo on Somalia in reaction to the ongoing conflict and deteriorating humanitarian situation. The diplomat said the issue should be revisited in order to find a lasting solution.
The question that needs to be answered is, how do we arm the Somalis for them to be able to do their work? So the issue of arming the Somali National Army still remains. We need a solution to it.
Madeira says the security situation is still dire. He cites the recent deadly bombing in Mogadishu by the militant group Al-Shabaab, where at least 300 people lost their lives and hundreds of others were seriously wounded.
We cannot ignore the challenges that still exist, that continue to put the lives of innocent Somalis at risk on a daily basis. The October 14 bomb attack, which had the highest fatalities ever recorded in a single incident in Somalia, is a reminder that Al-Shabaab will continue to change tactics in an attempt to erode the positive gains we have made in the fight against the terrorism over the years.
The mission has previously been confronted with uncertainty, both its future and funding, since the European Union capped troop allowances some 2 years ago. Ruben Chama for VOA News, Nairobi.
Activists are celebrating a Botswana court case that allowed a transgender man the right to change his gender identity. Until recently, South Africa was the only African nation that allowed such transformations. But even in the Rainbow Nation, while transgender residents who fled persecution in their own countries are hailing the court victory, some say they are still fearful for their own safety here and back home. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The news came right before Christmas, says lawyer Chiamo Rantau, whose client recently became the first transgender man in Botswana to be granted an identity document with his chosen gender. It was, Rantau says, cause for celebration for a man who spent a decade fighting for recognition. But his victory is underscored by a harsh reality. ND, as Rantau's client is known in court documents, did not want his real name known due to concerns for his safety. Rantau says his client is just an ordinary private guy who has very real fears.
He was concerned that he could be targeted over and above the fact that he's a private, he's not an activist. That's one of the reasons that he could be targeted.
Tashrul Esterhazen, an LBGTI program lawyer at the Southern Africa Litigation Center, says his organization has now helped lawyers win two such cases in Botswana. He says cases like these are not about sexuality, but about dignity.
And I think this is important because it set the space and it set the tone for other countries in the region who does not recognize legal recognition of gender identity to follow suit.
Currently, South Africa is the only other nation in the region with laws that explicitly protect sexual minorities. Malawi's penal code criminalizes consensual same-sex relations. Uganda in 2014 passed a harsh law that provides life imprisonment for aggravated homosexuality. Zimbabwe's laws also criminalize homosexuality. And across this conservative patch of Africa, religious leaders and some politicians have condemned those who do not conform to traditional gender roles, arguing such behavior is un-African or offensive to society. VOA News spoke to a man from the tiny kingdom of Lesotho, which criminalizes male same-sex acts and has no laws prohibiting discrimination over sexual orientation or gender. He currently lives in South Africa, he says, because it's the only place he can get the treatment and hormones he needs after he completed his medical transition 2 years ago. The 31-year-old asked us not to use his name, out of concerns for his security. He says he passes easily as male in South Africa, but that his national ID card still classifies him as female. He says he hopes these successful cases will spur other countries to grant more rights and services to people like him.
It's not about only changing legal documents. Even the health sectors, they have to be there to help. We shouldn't run away from our countries to come to South Africa where we can get all these things.
And what would he do if he could go home and change his gender status? Nothing extraordinary, he says. He dreams, he says, of going home, marrying a nice woman, and living a quiet life. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Skip Sisk, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
The Voice of America, VOA.